Welcome to Loveline. Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised.
Are you ready? Then brace yourself.
This is Loveline with Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara.
Call or text 833-LOVE-191.
Loveline is on now.
It sure is. Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara, producer Muggs in the house. Episode 7?
Mm-hmm.
Episode 7, is that confirmed?
Siete.
They say, right, you when you're having fun, you lose track of time.
Uh-huh.
We must be having fun. We've lost track of episodes. We believe it's episode 7. Thank you for joining us on the podcast, or if you're listening live on KROQ in Los Angeles. We're going to get right into it today on Loveline with a scam story. And when you think about a scam story, you think maybe about like a financial show, right?
Yeah.
Or a Klein Alley show, the morning show on K-Rock. No, not that they scam people. You're laughing because you're insinuating that. No, because they talk a lot about Klein getting scammed and scams to avoid. But you don't necessarily think of scams when you think of Loveline. Would you, Mugs? You wouldn't think of scams when you think of Loveline?
Like the kind of like physical scamming, like you used to say in middle school.
What is that?
What's physical scamming?
You guys have never heard
what?
Wait. You guys have never heard what scamming meant?
Is that how they used to, is that, like, no, that's ska music.
You mean like catfish?
No, like feeling each other up, scamming, making out.
No.
What?
In middle
school.
Oh, yeah. Whoa.
Scam, you want to go scam?
Wait. No.
That's a thing.
No,
how old are you guys?
No, wait. Scamming? Wait, what do you mean scamming?
It was like a slang in middle school, like when you were like, we're going to make out with somebody, like, and feel them up, and yeah.
Scamming. And where did that come from? Like, what does that speak to? Usually these things have like an origin.
I don't know the etymology of it. Here, let me, hold on.
Scamming. Yeah. Now, you grew up in Thailand, didn't you, Dr. Tara?
Right.
Did they ever call it scamming?
No.
What did they call it in Thailand?
Making out.
Really?
Yeah. We're straightforward people.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I remember hooking up. I remember, you know, like just like things like that. That's what we call it, making out.
I think the English language, especially American English, has a lot more slangs for sex-related things.
That's interesting. You think it has more slang than other languages?
Yeah.
I think slang is more cultural-based because, I mean, thinking about like the English language, British people have all sorts of slang that we don't have here.
Right, yeah. But people are learning more now because there's, like, a lot of, you know, famous British people here and, like, musicians, right? Like, people listen to music, like Lola.
Yeah, Lola Young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they learn, like, words from there.
Yeah, for sure. And hip-hop is huge in that, too.
On a community forum, it says... who
yeah, maybe that's your problem. Like, you're on a community forum.
No.
Credible source.
Maybe that's what they call them on community forums.
Beloved Bride 07 says, whenever I see the word scam, I remember middle school when it was used as a slang for making out, or maybe more. I was uncool and not privy to such details, probably because even then I used words like privy. But scamming, it was a word...
And what was the guy's username?
This is a girl, and it's Beloved Bride 07.
All right, so that's Muggs' username. Just so I'm serious. Beloved Bride 07. They'll never think it's me. Well, anyways, there are scams that take place in the world of romance, sex, and dating, which is what this show's all about. And this blew me away. You sent me this article this week, Dr. Tara.
Right.
And not that you're not reputable, but I didn't believe it. I thought this was just some sort of clickbait thing that maybe you fell for, because even the best of us fall for the clickbait at times. And I thought that there was no way that anybody on earth could be as stupid as the person that I'm about to tell you about on Loveline here. A woman... got scammed, okay? Well, let's start here. A woman got scammed and thought she was dating Brad Pitt, okay? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, already, this woman's a moron. I mean, this woman is a moron. And I don't mean to be so mean. But you're a moron. And you know what? You can be... There are some of my best friends are morons sometimes. This woman is an idiot, okay? How much do you think she got scammed? Because clearly the scam here, we'll read about it, is that somebody claimed they were Brad Pitt and then was like, I need money, right?
For what?
Well, I don't know. We'll get into that. But how much money do you think you can scam out of a woman if you're pretending to be Brad Pitt? How much money, Muggs, do you think?
If pretending to be Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
I mean, God, not a lot, because isn't Brad Pitt loaded?
Yeah, like, why would Brad Pitt need money?
Exactly.
Right. So see, now she's agreeing with me that this woman's a moron. So you think how much? Just give me a ballpark.
Maybe, let's say, the $300 deposit you need for a hotel room. Maybe he didn't have his card.
Yeah. And this was the hustle. $300. Yeah. What do you guess?
$10,000.
You think that this woman could get up to $10,000?
Yeah.
for Brad Pitt,
yeah,
who's a multi-billionaire, and probably not a billionaire, but a multi-millionaire, never has to worry about a money a day in his life for the rest of the time because of his successful movie career. That guy needs $10,000?
If she's in love with him.
Wow. All right, you want to know how much she got scammed for?
How much?
$800,000.
What?
Almost $1 million. So this is according to the BBC, the article that I'm reading, a French woman was conned out of $850,000 by scammers. I guess this is multiple people posing as actor Brad Pitt. And obviously she's faced a huge wave of mockery. It says here that the primetime program, I guess, that covered this, which aired on Sunday, attracted national attention on interior designer Anne. So she's probably 53 years old. She's 53. So this isn't a kid who thought she was in a relationship with Pitt for a year and a half. She says she has since told a popular French YouTube show that she was, quote, not crazy or a moron. Oh, she must have heard me. I just got played. I admit it. And that's why I came forward, because I am not the only one. A representative for Brad Pitt told U.S. outlet Entertainment Weekly that it was awful that scammers take advantage of fans, yada, yada, yada. Yeah, of course he's going to say that. Mm-hmm. This is just unbelievable. I'm trying to get more information here as to the story. And Muggs, if you want to pull it up on your end, and if you see anything you'd like to bring to our attention, please do. This is just incredible. And I guess she's just being mocked mercilessly
for this story. I think it's for a medical expense.
It's for a medical expense?
Yeah.
Well, then what do you know about this?
Because I saw pictures of it on TikTok. Like, Brad Pitt, or not real bad Brad Pitt, like a fake Brad Pitt, is in the hospital. And there's, like, pictures of him in the hospital.
Like, real Brad Pitt was in the hospital?
No.
Oh, fake Brad Pitt.
Yeah, was in the hospital and, like, sent pictures to her.
It says here in the report, Anne said her ordeal began when she downloaded Instagram in February 2023 when she was still married to a wealthy entrepreneur. Okay,
wow.
So Anne is a moron. Anne is a moron. Not only Anne. By the way, you can deny being a moron in France on Loveline, on K-Rock in America, and on the podcast. You're a moron. First off, you're doing this while married, so you're a scumbag. Second off, you're an idiot. Why would Brad Pitt, out of every... I have to get more details here because I'm getting a little worked up. I'll be honest with you. She was immediately contacted by someone who said they were Brad Pitt's mother, Jane Etta, who told Anne her son needed a woman just like her. Okay, so we're going to take this step by step. Is there any part of you that doesn't think this woman's a moron?
No.
I know you want to be nice. I know you want to be nice. But okay, so Mug's still a moron?
Still a moron.
Still a moron.
Absolutely.
Okay, so somebody purporting to be, just say pretending, these pretentious Frenchmen, or UK and on the BBC. Somebody purporting to be Pitt got in touch the next day, which set off alarm bells for Anne. But as, quote from Anne, but as someone who isn't very used to social media, I didn't really know what was happening to me. Okay, because, I like to do this on Loveline with you, doctor, since we have a sexual health expert like you here. Let's get down to the nitty gritty, the brass tacks of the matter, okay? This woman, when you want something to happen, you have confirmation bias, don't you? Okay.
Yes.
So this woman is married to a wealthy entrepreneur, okay? This woman sounds like a nightmare. I bet the wealthy entrepreneur doesn't pay any attention to this woman, okay? Mm. So this woman wants to believe that there is a man out there that would give her that kind of attention, okay? So there's this confirmation bias, this pre-existing confirmation bias that exists in this woman's brain that is going to lead her to entertain the idea that Brad Pitt is not going to reach out to Angelina Jolie. He's not going to reach out to Leonardo DiCaprio or Quentin Tarantino. He's not going to reach out to anybody in his life or extended network. He's going to reach out to Anne. French interior designer who's married. And by the way, he's not going to reach out to your wealthy entrepreneurial husband. He's going to reach out to you.
Because
his mother said he needs a woman like you. He needs a woman like Anne.
Right.
Which is, by the way, I was just recently watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And I at the end of that movie, it's like a 3-hour movie, I thought it was good. I thought his performance could be even better if he had somebody like Anne in his life.
I mean, is it shocking? Like, I can't deny anymore that she is a moron. But at the same time,
what are you doing, you moron?
Yes. Yes.
But at the same time, you know, when people are in desperate situations, and if she has been dissatisfied in her relationship or disrespected or ignored for a long time, it is possible that any sort of attention, you will, like, blow it out of proportion and think that this is, you know, like true feelings from a real person and therefore worth pursuing. Also, you know, people's obsession with celebrities is in fact human instinct. It's human instinct to follow, right? To like, to love celebrities, to like look up to celebrities. There's always celebrities in our culture from the very, very beginning of civilization. Like, there's always been religious leaders. There's always been like, you know, kings and queens. And so with Brad Pitt reaching out to her, she would be like, oh wow, like, you know, this is a very special person.
Well, it's only going to get worse because what you're describing is a parasocial relationship.
Yeah.
And those are only going to get worse as lifestyles become more and more parasocial.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just para-lifestyles.
Right.
We're increasingly living and we're sort of breeding these new generations, whether it's Gen Alpha or this is the first year, of course, we're calling babies Gen Beta. It's a new generation, if you didn't see that article. And these kids are basically VR and virtual reality is, if nothing else, a para experience, right? And I'm using layman terms. I don't know if these are the right terms.
Yeah.
But they're all parasocial relationships, right? And they're not real relationships. Mm-hmm. And we're going to live more and more isolated lives as technology is on the rise and AI is on the rise. And I don't want to sound like an old man barking at the wind here and telling you get off my lawn. But there are downsides to all this AI innovation and these parasocial relationships. We're just developing more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to get scammed like this. Now, this story, I don't mean to laugh, but listen to this. Anne and her husband divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Due to this?
I don't know. I don't know if that's why. But no shocker there that her and her husband divorced. Okay. So her husband's a wealthy entrepreneur. She's awarded $775,000. How much of that do you think went to fake Brad Pitt? Muggs?
I gotta say,
she loves him.
Well, I thought you said 850.
How much? That's just in total. How much of this, though?
Yeah,
went to fake Brad Pitt.
God, I hope no more than like 30%.
30% of the divorce settlement.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a big payday. You're married for years and decades, probably.
I really hope so. Yeah.
Mug says 30%. How much do you think of her divorce settlement? This is supposed to last for her the rest of her life. How much went to fake Brad Pitt?
10%.
$775,000. Mug says 30%. You say 10%. 100% went to fake Brad Pitt.
No.
What are you doing, you moron?
This woman is a moron. But I also think it's, jokes aside, right? And, you know, hopefully she doesn't get this in France. Does K-Rock air in France?
Yes.
But in all seriousness, I think there is a lesson here, okay? And this will come up later with something I also want to talk about. Mug's brought to my attention that we'll get to about, of all people, O.J. Simpson. If you're in a bad relationship, never underestimate the depths to which that can go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Really? No, really. Mm-hmm. If you're in a bad relationship, whether you're made to feel less than, mm-hmm. whether there's yelling, whether there's been infidelity, whatever, wouldn't you say, Dr. Tara, you get out.
Mm-hmm.
Out.
Yeah.
You have no... This woman cost herself... First off, she's probably can't go anywhere in France now because it sounds like she was all over the news. I mean, this poor woman, right? She's definitely got to move and relocate. There's that. She's out of $850,000. So a bad relationship cost this woman $850,000.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure it has cost people way more. There's lots of people that, you know, have really nasty, nasty divorce. And it goes on for years. And at the end of the day, I mean, have you ever heard of... God, what's her name? Becky?
With the good hair?
Becky with the good hair. Also, I think Plies had a song called Becky back in the day.
No, it's based on true story. I watch it on Netflix. It's this woman that was married to a lawyer husband who mm-hmm. like worked when he went to law school so that he could go to law school. Then he graduated law school, became this big shot lawyer, became like the president of the Lawyer Association of San Diego, and then cheated on her. And then I think she killed him.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. That's what we're talking about. Seriously, I really mean that as a cautionary tale. If you're listening to Love Art right now, you have an interest, obviously, in learning more about sexual health and dating and relationships and a healthy dating lifestyle, if you will. Please, 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 if you're in a bad relationship, in all seriousness, because we do get serious sometimes here on Loveline, you have to get out.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get out. I don't care if you think this is your person. It's not. It's not your person. Mm-mm. Not your person. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Another news story this week that Matt Barnes' fiance, whose name I don't have, I don't think. Matt Barnes. If Matt Barnes' fiance is listening right now to Loveline, Matt Barnes' fiance, Matt Barnes is not your person. Your person is not Matt Barnes.
No.
Oh, here we go. I want to pronounce this woman's name right. Anansa?
Yeah.
Okay. Anansa Sims seemingly accuses, who wrote this headline? Seemingly accuses Matt Barnes of cheating this is a weird headline. Anansa Sims accuses Matt Barnes of cheating with 8 different women in January alone. It says Matt Barnes' fiance appears to, this is a terribly written article. Did Muggs write this article?
It made sense when I read it.
Matt Barnes' fiance appears to have accused him of cheating, it says. According to The Shade Room, Anansa Sims took to her Instagram to write the scintillating caption, "Why Matt, 8 different women in January," a picture of the couple in happier times, and with a caption on screen that says, "I once loved a man so much that I was fixing him while he was breaking me." I do want to say boo-hoo, but that is a tale as old as time. And I kind of, when you hear like women talk about that or men talk about that, I tried to fix this person. I have no sympathy for those people.
Oh, I mean...
Do you?
I do.
Okay, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Because, you know, there's a reason why you became this way, a fixer.
Yes.
And we talked about, like, people in our lives being fixers, like Muggs being one of them.
Right.
Like, dating people that need fixing because they think they can fix them.
Right.
Yeah, and in their head, it's empowering because they're here to, like, they're the savior. They're here to change your life, to make you become a better person, to, you know, allow you to live, like, a more fulfilling life. It can seem powerful, and I think it can be addictive to date someone with problems so that you can fix them.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
it makes you feel good.
I think that's like a glass half full kind of view on it, where it's like it empowers them. Mm-hmm. I think it's escapism. I think that fixers typically have a lot of things that they could be fixing. Mm-hmm. And instead of fixing those things, which are harder to do, they fix other people's problems.
I think that too.
So I think it's a little bit of
that. Both.
My question is how the hell do you have time to juggle 8 women?
But it doesn't say that it's like 8 relationships.
Days.
It could just all be one night stands.
It says here that...
That's still tough.
Anansa Sims welcomed a second child. I guess they've got 2 kids, her and Matt Barnes, who's a former NBA player, if you're unfamiliar. And it says that Sims and Barnes started dating in 2018 and have since been through several highs and lows. Oh, I understand. I think I know why this is weird. I don't think this is the article I sent Muggs. This is a different article.
Yeah, the one you sent me was another Brad Pitt article. Sorry.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I believe like one of these women like sold the couple auto insurance or something to that effect. There was more, my point is there's a lot more details in this other article if I can bring it up really quick. And it's to answer Muggs' question, because it is a good question. How on earth can you possibly do that in a month? I mean, January has 31 days. So, I mean, I'm bad at math. But Muggs, can you divide on your computer? What's 31 divided by 8?
31 divided by 8. Carry like the 2. Hold on.
3, 4. No, it's almost 4.
Like 4.
So it's like a woman every 4 days. It's a woman every 4 days, basically.
3.8 women.
There you go. So it says that basically it's... after they began dating in 2018, Matt and Anansa welcomed their first child in December of that year. Again, kind of like the what were we talking about? How the last week, Aaron Taylor Johnson and his wife.
Yeah.
Didn't they get married like immediately?
A year after.
Yeah, see, I think there's some red flags there. I mean, I hope they're happy people, those two. But it says here that, like, within the first year of dating in 2018, Matt and Anansa had a child. Yet less than 2 years later, Sims reported to have filed a restraining order against Matt Barnes. Again, that doesn't really seem great. I think if you're ever dating somebody and they're trying to move really fast or you're trying to move really fast, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad. And it's not Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
The reason... Can I say something, too? A public service announcement. Okay. The reason why, I'm looking directly at the camera right now on Loveline if you want to watch on YouTube. The reason why relationships and love stories in movies move so fast is because that movie can only be 2 hours, okay? Your life is longer than 2 hours. So it's not going to be like the movies. Stop thinking that the Hinge date is going to be like the movies. It's not, okay? And he is not Hugh Grant or Glenn Powell or whoever, or Ryan Reynolds, okay? He's not. I'm just saying, he's not. So don't rush into it, okay?
Right.
You don't know if you've met the love of your life after the first date.
Mm-mm.
You absolutely have no idea. Of course, in the movie, you do, because we only have 2 hours. But in life... Oh, I was like, is this a...
Is it the airplane?
Is this the TX, THX? You're an idiot. An idiot.
That's how the that's all how the best movies start.
Yeah, okay. He's a big fan of surround sound, I guess. No, but it just get away from the movie. Stop watching movies.
Mm-hmm.
Stop watching movies or TV shows. If you grew up on watching 30-minute sitcoms or TV shows like Sex and the City or Felicity, or I'm just thinking of like these things, or like or One Tree Hill, or I'm thinking of these like sort of like generational shows that I grew up with, right? That teach, I think, get people on the wrong path. It doesn't happen like that. And you can you can probably tell us more.
There's a lot of extreme romanticism nowadays. And you know, like, humans created romanticism, right? Like, it's not necessary for us to experience romance in order to carry forward our species.
Well, wait, hold on a second. We have to be the only species with romance, right?
Well, we don't know that because they found that dolphins also have romance.
Romance?
Yeah.
And how do you, to me, romance is like this intangible thing, because in a relationship, one person can think, oh, I'm being romantic, or there's enough romance, and somebody goes, no, there's not enough romance.
Like, that's my point. It's very subjective.
Muggs, can you look up, like, can animals be romantic?
On it.
Because dolphins are very smart.
Yeah.
I know that.
And I mean, like we just said, romance is subjective. So maybe they have certain set of behaviors that they find romantic. Like penguins, right? Mm-hmm. Like how they will go find a pebble and bring a pebble to their mate. Like, if we use the human romanticism framework, that's pretty romantic.
Like, yeah, but do you ever think we're interpreting it that way? Like, because
right.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, like, yeah, but because we're studying it, like, as humans, then that could be romantic. But anyways, like, I think there has always been extreme romanticism in human experiences and dramatization in romantic relationships. I'm a Virgo, so a lot of times I'm being very analytical. So even when I met now my husband, when we met, I was like, I think this is my soulmate. I still had, you know, the calculations in mind of like, well, but like, what are our situations? What are, you know, what are our values? Are we compatible generally? Are we sexually compatible? Like, there are a lot of things that I think about. But then there are people that don't think about the analytical things at all about their relationships, and they're based solely on the romantic connection that they have with these people. And that's why some people say they want to go on dates and feel the butterflies in their stomach, right? But nowadays, a lot of therapists will agree with me that's actually not a good feeling at all. That, like, messes up your nervous system. You actually want to date someone that makes you feel calm.
But that's why I think people are love bombing so much, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because that's what they see in the movies.
Just extreme romanticism.
It's like, so funny.
Do you have a lot of romanticism in your life?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think more than anything, I'm very romantic. But also, I've gone through my 20s of like making every mistake in the book because I think learned too much and tried to emulate too much from, you know, what I saw on the screen. And by the way, I just want to look back to this viewer over here who I just ranted to on YouTube. If you want to watch the podcast on YouTube, the reason I know this is not because I'm holier than thou or because I'm perfect. It's because I've made all these mistakes. I know this is not how things work because I've made these mistakes multiple times. No, I think romance is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think anybody, I would argue that any storyteller is a romantic.
Mm.
I would think it would be weird to find somebody who works in storytelling, and it's a broad term, right? It can be a lot of different industries, that isn't romantic.
What if it's a really stoic story?
What?
Where nothing happens and everything's neutral?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds terrible. I'm like, please don't swipe on me, I guess, if you're like that.
Do you want to know the answer to the... If animals are romantic?
Sure.
Yes. By the way, I love, for the listening experience, is that when Muggs, we'll ask Muggs to do something on the show, and then, like, you know in horror movies where you think the monster's dead?
Yeah.
And then the monster comes back to life in, like, the last 15 minutes? Look, we'll ask a question, and you'll just assume, you're listening to this podcast, you'll assume it's gone, right? And then, out of nowhere, here comes Muggs. Muggs, yeah, what is the answer? And just to remind, this is, I asked you if animals can be romantic.
Yeah, and Tara mentioned something about penguins, and she was on
something because it says neuroscientific research indicates that romantic love may have been involved in avian and mammalian species to facilitate reproduction. So,
penguins.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You know what?
That's
I think
a bird.
You know what?
Avian.
I think, yeah. You know what? I think I'm realizing is probably the higher the IQ of the animal, the more is required for consent or reciprocation.
Interesting.
Right? Like the higher consciousness.
Yeah.
So we're talking about dolphins.
Yeah.
We're talking about penguins, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about mammals and then
avian.
All right, cool. Sounds like a fashion designer or something.
Sounds like water.
The Grammys.
Avian water.
The Grammys are today, and they would be like, and excuse me, what are you wearing? I'm actually head to toe an avian. This is avian.
Oh, that means we're done.
Oh, there we go. Is that that's the buzzer. All right, we'll be back. If you're listening on K-Rock, we'll be back right after this. Don't go anywhere if you're listening to the podcast. It is Love Line.
Love Line.
Love Line.
With Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara.
We'll be right back.
Oh, feels so good, doesn't it?
K-Rock. It brings you beautiful love, and it'll drive your mind through 1,000 terror-filled moments.
Love Line. Back with more Love Line.
K-Rock.
This is cool. I dig this. What song is this?
Sounds like Rob Zombie. I don't know. Doesn't it?
I dig it.
Trevor would know.
Is it Static X?
Sounds like one of
those. It might
bands.
Be Static X.
Power Man 5000?
Yeah. It sounds like something off the Freddy vs. Jason soundtrack. Anyways, it is Love Line, Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara, producer Muggs. And we're going to talk about Hollywood, or maybe we should call it Holly Weird, because there's a lot of very interesting storylines and I guess aspects to some very popular movies these days. I mean, even Oscar nominees are kind of getting into the, would you call these fetishes or kinks?
Kinks.
Kinks.
Mm-hmm.
And you've explained this before, mm-hmm. but I am a poor learner on Love Line, Dr. Tara. What is the difference between a fetish and a kink?
A kink is more of an all-encompassing term, and kink can be any sexual preferences that's like outside the norm. But okay. A fetish is what you require order to have sexual climax or sexual satisfaction. So if you have a foot fetish, like you require seeing feet, touching feet, smelling feet, licking feet, sucking feet in order to have an orgasm.
Okay, so are there foot fetishes in the world and foot kinks in the world?
There's probably people that have like foot kinks, like, okay. Oh yeah, like I like feet, but it's not, I don't need it.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, you will help us navigate some of these big Hollywood headlines these days from movies. I mean, these aren't even Hollywood headlines in the sense of like, you know, you'd read about them in trade magazines or websites of like producers and movies in development and something like that. These are actually storylines and aspects mm-hmm. of films. And one of them that you've been talking about for a minute now, I don't know if you like the movie or not, Baby Girl.
I like the movie.
You do?
Although it's controversial, many of my sex therapist friends do not like the movie.
Huh. Okay, so set the table. Nicole Kidman stars in it.
Right.
And that's all I know about it. All I know about it.
You've seen previews, right?
No, I don't know. I'm really? So bad with movies. I mean, even last week, you guys were kind of laughing at me for these big movies with Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yeah.
That I just don't know about. So, like, how would you explain Baby Girl to a friend of yours who hasn't
without
seen it?
Without spoilers?
You know what, Muggs, can we do spoilers?
Yeah, just say what? All you have to do is spoiler alert.
Yeah,
okay, spoiler alert. Nicole Kidman is an older woman, very successful CEO in a loving relationship with children. Then
married?
Yeah, married.
To a man?
Yes.
Okay.
And a very powerful CEO. Then this boy comes in, right? He's in his early 20s. He's an intern at her company.
Well, wait, does she work with her husband in the film?
No.
Are they both CEOs?
No. The husband is, let me remember. The husband is a creative. Like, he works on, like, dance. Like, he's a creative. He's not, he's more of a, like, feminine. He's a creative.
She is
the boss of the house.
And is the intern very masculine?
Yeah.
Okay. Even at 20-something years old, he's very masculine.
Yeah. Very domineering because the scene where they first met was when he was able to tame a dog, like, immediately.
And that turned her on.
Yeah.
Isn't that hilarious? Muggs is just, we talk about it all the time, the difference between male sexual psychology and female sexual psychology. A woman can get turned on by watching a man tell a dog to sit.
Seems boring.
No, it was so hot because that dog was kind of like out of control. Yet this man comes in and totally like alpha this dog. And this dog kind of whimpers and like sips.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So she saw him. She was curious. It wasn't like she's immediately sexually turned on, but she was curious about him. But then they kind of just went different ways. Then later on, he came into the office and he's like, oh, I'm one of the new interns. They had like a bunch of interns.
And she didn't know that he was an intern.
He was going to work for her, yeah.
So he just lives around her or something like that?
No, they were walking to the office.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, they were walking to the office, then there was this dog incident.
Right.
Then she went to the office. Then he went to the office, and then that's where they met.
Oh.
In a big group of people.
Oh.
But she was always very intrigued by him. Like, and she was always watching.
Her husband, I take it, maybe doesn't have control over his life or doesn't have control over the family?
I mean, in the movie, it's portrayed that the husband is very healthy. Like, he's not the problem.
Okay.
Yeah, he's healthy. He loves her. They have sex. They have good sex. They show that at the beginning of the movie.
Nice. I'll watch it.
Yes. They have good... There's a lot of good sex scenes.
Ooh, a lot? Like, how many?
Not as many as I would want.
Okay. Oh, you want more? All right.
Yeah, but I think it has to still be a movie and not porn.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So then the movie... It progresses that, like, he continuously kind of give her clues of like being her dominant, right? Like they went out to grab drinks, like happy hour.
This is so inappropriate.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, does anyone say that in the movie?
That's why it's so hot. It's so inappropriate. It's taboo.
Really?
But they went to happy hour. He ordered milk for her. So all of a sudden, this server delivered milk to the table.
Okay.
And he like looked at her. And she knew, without talking, she grabbed the glass, drank the entire thing, and then and then cleaned off her mouth. And then they were staring at each other. So, like, they knew that both of them kind of, like, practice something like this, you know?
Muggs, what do you think would happen if you ordered milk to the table at your bar?
Restraining order.
I would lap it up like a cat.
Yeah, he would do it. He would do it. Oh. He wouldn't even be the woman. Wait, so then what? So then do they progress into a dom sub relationship?
Yeah.
Okay. So then there's
experimental.
What does that mean?
Like both of them, like it wasn't like immediately they come together and then they immediately get into this relationship smoothly. Like there was a lot of. It was hard to get into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that the reason why a lot of men that date women have trust issues is because women's sexual psychology has the capacity to include taboo things that are inherently wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that even if you provide for this woman and you love her to the best of your ability that you know how, she may still, and this probably goes for men as well in terms of the other way, they may still cheat on you because they saw a guy tell a dog to sit.
This very much goes with men as well. And actually, men, there are more men with like weird, unique kinks and fetishes than women. Like, for example, not to say, you know, that a lot of men do this. However, if you look at the statistics, like there are a lot more men with pedophilia than women.
Oh, really?
Right. So, like, men have weird F-up fantasies, and I think whether or not you act on it is the more important question. Because just because you can think about things doesn't mean you're a bad person, right? It's like being creative, like erotic creativity is acceptable. You know, when people make movies of people murdering each other like Saw, right? Doesn't mean that the producer or the person that made that movie wants to go out and murder people.
No.
Right. So same thing with if you are able to creatively think and write out like really weird F up like sex scenes, doesn't mean you're going to go out and do it.
I have a question for you though. Like professionally speaking, if somebody's listening to this right now and they're having thoughts they're uncomfortable with, right? And I don't, I think messed, I guess you can say messed up, but I want, when I ask this question, I want to be very kind to people that may be privately suffering with, I don't know, bad thoughts in the sense of problematic sexual interests, right? Pedophilia or, I don't know, something equally as terrible as that. When should you seek help?
when you feel like you want to now act on it.
You should preemptively
immediately seek help.
Right. Yeah. Because it's very popular nowadays, like these, like, I mean, I think there's actually like a, some case, like a court, like a legal case about it now, but, in the streaming world, mm-hmm. It's kind of like a bastardized version of a How to Catch a Predator, mm-hmm. that show back in the day, mm-hmm. With Chris Hansen, and they'll just bombard these people who were mm-hmm. looking to meet up, obviously, and do a terrible thing and meet mm-hmm. up with children. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, though, when I see that stuff, there's a part of me that like feels bad for this awful person, right? Because I kind of see them as like this sick person who just like probably has a zillion things wrong with them. And by the way, I want to be very clear when we talk about this very, very, very sensitive subject. This is not at all making a case at all under the sun.
Never.
But there is a part of it, I don't know, where I'm like this poor deranged person in mm-hmm. a weird way, mm-hmm. right? Like, how did this person get so messed up in their life?
Right.
And I wonder sometimes if there is information out there for people who have this awful mental illness, or again, I'm an idiot. I don't know what I'm talking about in the sense of like what do they classify it medically? I don't know if it's mental mm-hmm. illness. I don't know if it's just a perversion. I have no idea, but it's an awful thing.
It can be a disorder, yeah.
Right, and it doesn't make an excuse for it at all. You have this thing, and it's you cannot act on that, obviously. But I wonder if there is information or resources on what to do if like. You know, like, we have resources. What I'm trying to say is we have resources if you feel like you're, like, drinking a little too much.
Or want to kill yourself.
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Yes. And, I mean, this thing is just awful.
Yeah.
And what would you recommend, if you can?
Yeah. I would say two main things. One, seek out for a professional. And then two, find community. Because there's a lot of people.
Well, I don't know about... Well, that's dicey, though.
Well,
a community of fellow people that are messed up
suffering.
Like this?
Well, think of AA.
Yeah, but
recovering addicts, right? This is could be people that are recovering from weird, unacceptable, illegal kinks that haven't acted on it, but feel very ashamed about the types of experiences that they're thinking and feeling.
Right.
It could like hold each other accountable.
Yeah.
For not like committing.
Right.
Any of the things that they're thinking.
Uh huh.
But definitely seek out a professional, like talking to a sex therapist is, I think, extremely helpful. I have seen many people that have gone through the process of unpacking their quote unquote weird kinks with professionals and find so much peace and find so much understanding within themselves that they are able to like move forward and still like practice the other related kinks that they also like that are legal.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, isn't it an increasingly more and more dangerous time for these interests and perversions because people are living post-pandemic, like more and more work from home, isolated mm-hmm. lives. We hear about these topics like incels, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, there's been documented cases of incel violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
That these seemingly like regular normal people almost can get radicalized by pornography.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear about these, like Ted Bundy, there's a clip of Ted Bundy talking about how he doesn't know anybody, a highly violent serial killer individual that didn't also have an unhealthy relationship with pornography. I mean, he's on camera, Ted Bundy, talking about this.
Wow.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that's Ted Bundy saying it. And he obviously, you know, attests to that. But
wow, I haven't heard that clip.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we can find it quickly or not. But
I can see some grounds. Like, I can see the reasons why he said that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think there is a concern, a growing concern that these things.
The more isolated people are, the easier they become radicalized.
Well, I think what it is that with pornography, you increasingly need more and more novel of a concept. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not even differentiated. I think in the male brain, it's novel, mm-hmm. right? So you start off with like glossy, like heavily produced stuff.
Yeah.
But then you're like, well, what about amateur stuff?
Yeah.
And then you're like, no, what about like real amateur stuff? Mm-hmm. Not stuff that's shot to mm-hmm. seem amateur. And then if you don't stop yourself at a certain age or find a loving relationship early enough, and maybe you struggle socially, that long tail mm-hmm. can also lead to these things, and I want your opinion on this, and I know I heard your note mugs, but I want your opinion on this, Dr. Tara. I feel like, theorizing, because you need this more and more increasing novelty, your brain will form a connection, a positive connection with this incredibly novel pornography. I mean, think about the craziest thing you could imagine, right? The craziest scenario you could imagine.
I can't think.
Right? No, but right. Yeah. Okay. And maybe you eventually get to like a problematic place, right? Mm-hmm. And you have this brain connection of pleasure with that. But it's not to me, and again, this is my interpretation. You're the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is like not true pleasure. Mm-hmm. It's like that's what you require now. That's what you require mm-hmm. now. And so what happens is then maybe you go, well, I want to do that in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you might do it in real life and you might be like, what am I doing? I mean, that's got to happen, right?
Yeah.
So talk about it. I know I just threw a lot at you, but I think that's something that like some of the questions we get at Loveline, at I Love Loveline, I just read them sometimes. I'm like, man, like, not that there's a problem, but like that I almost want to be like, and I would never answer because you're the doctor, but I just think to myself, is this person like sure this is what they want?
Mm.
Or are they heavily influenced by pornography?
Most people are not sure of what they want, especially when it comes to sexuality.
Right.
And there's, you know, research that shows that. Like, a lot of people don't know their actual sexual preferences.
Right.
And just the way it goes, because we never taught comprehensive sex education in the United States. So most people are clueless of what are some of the things out there and what's a healthy way to practice something that is unique and unconventional, right? So everything that these people learn from, well, most of us learn from, is like from porn. And if you watch it in your developmental years where your brain is still, you know, mushy, like it's still working, it's still developing, right? Like in your, like in like middle school, for example, then you get addicted to this system of dopamine hit every time you have a new click. Every time there's a new video, there is a spike in dopamine. So dopamine hit, and it hits again, and it hits again. And there's nothing in real life that has been documented that gives you the same kind of hits consistently. Not in real romantic relationships, ever. In real life sex, you definitely have dopamine and oxytocin and serotonin, but it isn't like watching porn. That's why a lot of guys that watch a lot of porn find sex with their spouse or partner very boring and unsatisfying, because it's not giving the same dopamine hits. This is why for some men, if they have been watching porn for a long time, they need a cleanse.
I have a couple questions, because that was fascinating what you just said. So when you know the term, obviously, iPad kids, right? Like, I was actually, I don't want to name the restaurant because it's kind of a bad story, but Muggs recommended an amazing restaurant that I've been to like a bunch of times now here in the Los Angeles area. And I saw a kid with his family the other day. I was there and walk in, and there's like a family of like five, you know, parents, three kids. And one of the kids didn't even look up. The mother held the door open for him, didn't even look up, was just on this screen, right? And like swiping, scrolling, right? To paint the picture. They're seated next to us at this restaurant. I'm watching this kid the whole meal. I mean, he didn't look up once, right?
Wow.
Scrolling, 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 scrolling. So it makes me think, these dopamine hits, right?
Oh, yeah.
These rapid dopamine hits, right? Okay. Now, that kid's going to grow up, probably develop sexual interests, probably discover porn at some point, okay?
Yeah.
Dopamine hits.
Yep.
Okay? A little older than that, he's going to get introduced to vapes, right?
Yep.
What is that? Dopamine hits. Like this, right?
Yeah.
Okay? Then think about, then he gets a little older, he wants a date. Okay, he's going to download an app, okay? What's that going to be? Dopamine hits, right? And what you're going to have, I know this sounds hyperbolic, I think you're going to have a generation of dopamine addicts. I mean, that we can't even fathom.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think we already do have that generation.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really think about that, and that's just my theory, you know, a doofus, but if you start with the iPad and the swiping and the TikTok, right? When you're really young, I don't think, by the way, I love TikTok.
Yeah.
But my brain is fully formed, bro.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a fantastic book, actually, called The Anxious Generation that I've read. Just came out. It was a New York Times bestseller. I don't know if you heard about it. It is startling.
Yeah.
I mean, really, if you listen to Loveline and you have children, please read that book.
Yeah.
Because you
highly recommend.
take those things away from your, they're gonna ruin your child. And I know it's tough, dude. You don't always want to watch the kid.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not even a parent. I can empathize with that. You wake up some days, you don't want to be a mom. You don't want to be a dad. You're like, man, it's a job I have to show up to every day. It's exhausting.
Yeah, but there's a difference between like a 30-minute screen time versus like 5 hours screen time.
Sure.
Yeah, and with children, with developing brains, 30-minute screen time is fine. 5 hour screen time is going to have long term effects.
Oh, for sure. And I even was thinking, like, I was obsessed with the Power Rangers as a kid, right? Obsessed. I thought I was a Power Ranger as a kid. And I remember it would come on, let's say, I assume Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
Right? Once a week it would come on, this Mighty Morphin Power Ranger show. Obsessed with it. Okay. But I didn't tape record it. I would watch it once a week. And then you know what I would do? Yeah, babe. By the way, listen to this riff. Listen to this riff.
7 years, I'm free.
Yeah.
It's time to conquer.
This is creepy. Look at this.
The primitive of teenagers with attitude.
Okay. Pause it. Why was Zordon, he heard, you just really quickly, and then we'll get back on point. Zordon heard that these awful people who had been gone for 10,000 years were back, okay? And Zordon goes, who's this old guy, he's this old decrepit guy. You ever see this show back in the day?
No.
Okay, Muggs, you remember this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Zordon is this old decrepit man who's in a, he's so weak and old, he's in a tube. Okay?
Wasn't it a hologram?
It was like a hologram of him, right? But I think in the movie, they break the hologram. The bad guys break the hologram and you see Zordon there. Anyways, so this old guy hears that like his enemies are back after 10,000 years, right? And his response is he tells his pet robot to gather him up a bunch of teenagers with attitude. Is that not a little creepy, Muggs?
Yeah.
What is that? You don't call the government? Yeah. You know, or you're not like, hey, someone should let Homeland Security know these people just got out of like 10,000 year prison.
This is Japanese?
What is the origin of Mighty Morphin?
Yeah, it is Japanese. The live footage was a Japanese show, and then they like dubbed it for America.
Okay,
they didn't trust their government.
We're positive about this. It's Japanese.
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little weird. Anyways, Zordon's a little weird. My point, though, on the topic of
I think I would like to shower with you.
That was Zordon right there.
My point on a very serious matter with children and psychology that I think is important to talk about on Loveline, because kids are eventually going to be adults one day, you know, and adolescents even sooner.
Right.
Is that when I was obsessed with Power Rangers as a kid, there would be 6 days where I didn't have access to Power Rangers. And I don't care how much I wanted to watch Power Rangers, I could not watch Power Rangers. So what happened? I would draw Power Rangers, okay?
Oh.
I would pretend, I'd go out in my backyard with my friends, and I would pretend we were Power Rangers. And so what that did is it fostered all this creativity in me. And then you know what I discovered as a kid? I love to draw.
Mm-hmm.
I love to do art. I love to perform, and I love to act with my friends in the backyard. We were being active. We were exercising. We were jumping off things, right?
Yeah.
We were being kids. Our imaginations were being fostered
in
those 6 days that we wanted to feel closer to the show that we loved, right? Mm-hmm. But we couldn't. Now what is going to happen with these iPad kids that can watch a zillion episodes of something whenever they want? They learn that they can get things whenever they want.
Yeah, yeah. And that can become extremely problematic as adults, because we live in a society where you don't get everything that you want.
Absolutely not. I mean, my generation even struggled with that. Think about that. I mean, our generation, I should say.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just, like, people today in their 30s don't understand that you don't get everything you want.
No, and there's people that experience with, you know, anxiety and depression, and a lot of it is from that, right?
Oh, totally.
If you consistently get dopamine hits from multimedia, when you live your normal life, you walk outside and you walk by yourself, there isn't like, you know, these ding, 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 ding of dopamine hits anymore. Like, what am I going to do with myself? I don't know what to do with myself. The only default mode that I know of myself is when I'm consuming information, when I'm consuming entertainment. And so that will then affect people, particularly in my domain, in dating. People will not know how to date, because when they go on dates, it's so different from, you know, like texting, sending emojis, sending memes, sending GIFs, to meeting in person, making eye contact, having a full long form conversation. So I think we're going to see a huge cultural shift in how dating is going to be done with Gen Alpha, which is going to be a while because they're young. But I mean, I'm excited and nervous to see what's going to happen because that's a huge generational shift is the iPad kids, and that's Gen Alpha.
And so, a little bit of Gen Z.
A little bit of Gen Z, but some of them didn't have it since they were like five. But the Gen Alphas do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we'll see.
Well, you know what's interesting about this is like we kind of get poo-pooed when we talk about it. They say you're old or you're out of touch, right?
No,
or,
like, and I love Gen Z. My whole team is Gen Z. They're so creative because here's something that I want to mention. Even though there's a lot of this like technology addiction within Gen Z, there's also a lot more conversations about wellness, a lot more conversations about mental health. When we were young, like, do you remember anyone talking about mental health?
I don't even think I heard that phrase, in all honesty. I went to
until 10 years ago.
Well, I started going to therapy when I was like 17 years old.
Right.
And I think mental health may have been on the door to the therapist's office.
Yeah.
But it was like a medical term.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and we're millennials, right? Like, when we were young, like, mental health didn't exist.
No.
Right. So now with Gen Zs, they are a lot more open-minded towards, like, taking care of themselves mentally. You know, the term self-care became really popular.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, even though there is this technology addiction going on, there's also concurrently, like, wellness waves going on, which I think it kind of, like, cancels out a little bit, at least for most people that I interact with. Like, the Gen Zs in my team, they're all, like, just really kicking butts. They're amazing people.
I've met some of your team, and they're amazing, amazing human beings. I will say this, though. We do get poo-pooed sometimes when we talk about this stuff, but in almost any other industry, over-leveraging, right, and overspending, there's a visceral cost. You think of like the housing crisis of the 2000s, right? Mm-hmm. We were over-leveraging homes, right? Mm-hmm. People were buying homes in the United States. They had no business having the credit and the loans and earning the loans to get those homes, right? And then what happens? The bubble bursts, like the dot-com bubble, like every single stock market crash. You know, it's over-leveraging. Why don't we talk about that socially? Because we are. We're over-leveraging dopamine. We're over-leveraging it. You know what I mean? It's like we're diluting. We talk about it all the time in politics and the budget, in the national deficit, excuse me. And inflation and these problems that America faces, but we don't talk about it with our own neurotransmitters.
Right.
Where does this lead? We're just diluting it.
It's really scary.
Right?
Because when you break it down, it's not just entertainment, social media, or porn. It's also like eating.
Yeah.
You know, people eating like a lot of junk food and having like Uber Eats and Postmates like available. And like everything.
It's insane. We have more Love Line coming up next.
More Love Line still to come.
With Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara.
Love Line on K-Rock.
This is Love Line. Just what I wanted.
And now, time for Love Bites.
Nasty, aren't you?
Ooh, I love that intro.
It's great.
Okay, so Love Bites is all about sharing just bite-sized research findings regarding love, sex, relationships. And today, we're going to talk about a trend of a type of relationship that's becoming more and more popular these days. Because back in the days, you know, let's say, not even that long ago, like let's say back in the 60s or the 50s, you would never see this kind of relationship.
Ooh.
Ready? So 18 million people, well, about 18 million people in the U.S. are in house-husband relationships.
House-husband?
Yeah, that means that the woman, this is a heterosexual relationship, and the woman is the sole income earner.
Really? Mm-hmm. See, in my day, we called that Mr. Mom. Is that problematic, Mr. Mom?
Kind of. Let's unpack that. What
does that
mean?
There's a Michael Keaton movie. Hey, Muggs, confirm this for me if you can hear me, Muggs. Michael Keaton was in a movie in the 80s called Mr. Mom.
I believe he was.
Right? And Michael Keaton is the man. Also, Michael Keaton's real name, Michael Douglas. That blew my mind when I found that out.
Wait, what?
Yeah, his name is Michael. That's why he made up the name Michael Keaton, is because there's already a guy named Michael Douglas. Shout out to Michael Douglas.
Wow.
And going down on your wife, I guess,
that's
Michael
amazing.
Douglas.
What? Wait a minute.
What?
Michael Douglas down on his wife?
Yeah, Catherine Zeta-Jones. Michael Douglas apparently, back in the day, said he got mouth cancer from going down on his wife too much.
Stop.
Not making it up.
No.
Can you look that up? I think that was a story.
No, that is a story.
But can you look that up? What is the official story? Is that really how it went down, where Michael Douglas went down on his wife too much and
he's
got mouth
alive.
Cancer. Or throat cancer. Maybe it was throat cancer. Anyways, I don't want to distract from Mr. Mom. We used to call those people Mr. Moms.
Okay. Yeah, he says it's from HPV.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Just say, hey guys, you doing that? Be careful.
Yeah. So like house husbands, I mean, it's because of, you know, for the last 20 years, really, there is a rise of women getting college degrees. Like, did you know there are more women getting college degrees than men?
In the last 10 years or so?
In the last 20 years.
Why do you think that is?
The growth. I think, you know, women are very intellectual. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and a lot of men actually love working with their hands.
Yeah, that's what I was going to think.
And more tactical.
Did you grow up with Lincoln Tech commercials out here, or is that an East Coast thing?
Is that ITT Tech?
Yeah, yeah. Like, it would always be a guy being like, I'm making $70,000 a year.
Yeah.
And like, I got my degree in 18 months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's Muggs University Phoenix Online.
It's a little more honorable than that. But no, like, in a lot of like trade work. Yeah. So, but those people don't necessarily go to college.
Right, okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. So a lot more women have been like going to college and graduating. We're talking about like more women graduating from college.
Okay.
There could be a lot of men going to, but not graduating.
Like, how many people in radio mugs do you think went to college?
Actually, quite a few.
Really?
Yeah.
You know a lot of people?
Yeah.
That went to college and like graduated from college?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Did you go to college?
Yeah. Where'd I went to two colleges. No, I went to three colleges, kind of. I went to Florida State University. And the minute I got there, I was like, this is the dumbest spending of money. And I wasn't even spending it. My mother was.
Oh.
I was like, this is so stupid. Everyone there was just wasting their parents' money. And I just remember this overwhelming feeling. Yeah, I just remember this overwhelming feeling of like, I got to do this for 4 years. I got to do this for 4 years. This is so stupid. And then so I dropped out of there. And then I went to a community college for like a day.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is terrible. Like the kids here are lunatics. And then I told my family I was going to college for 2 years. And I actually went off and became a pro wrestler.
Oh, what?
Swear. And then I tried out with the WWE when I was 19, 20 years old.
Yeah.
Didn't get a contract. So I was like, I probably should go back to college because this wrestler told me, he's like, I'm a mailman. I don't even think Muggs knows this story. A wrestler told me that he was a mailman. And I was like, that's probably a cool job. And we were drinking one night. He's like, it's not a cool job at all. I hate my life. He's like, go to college, kid. Don't be like me. And I was like, wow, I don't want to be a mailman, dude. And then so it sounds terrible. I thought it was cool. I guess not.
That would have been a good character for his like wrestling character.
Yeah, the mailman.
Yeah,
came out with mail.
Yeah, and he was. He actually, it's so funny you say that. And that wasn't his character. He was just a guy, actually. So then I went back to college and I did that in 2 years. I took just like tons of credits because I never wanted to be in college. I wanted to go start a business. I wanted to get into this thing, this entertainment industry. And I was just impatient. So yes, I did go to college. I have a college degree, but and I almost was my class speaker. I was number two. I was in second place in the class speaker. But you know why they didn't let me do it? I tried out and everything. Is I wasn't a part of enough extracurricular activities. And this absolute loser. I'm sorry. This guy's nothing. I bet you this guy's doing nothing right now. And I always bring it back. I always bring this up when I talk to some friends of mine back in college. Is like the administration that I'm still friendly with. Like they went with him because he's in like a fraternity or something.
Oh.
And he got up there and he stunk up the joint so badly. Mine was amazing. My story or my speech. But anyways, clearly you've hit a raw nerve because I just ranted there. Muggs went to college.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you graduate Muggs or no?
I did. I did the 7-year plan. I did 3 years at community college.
That's the Van Wilder plan.
Yeah. Shout out Pierce College in Woodland Hills. And then I transferred for 4 years at Cal State University Northridge.
4 years? Usually you do like 2 at community college and then 2 at the university.
Yeah, I did 3 at community college and 4 at the university. It's a 7-year plan.
It took him a while to write his name right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Muggs, maybe you would like being a house husband, would you?
You know what's so funny about that, Tara? We'll talk about it for another episode, but I was proposed that. Same question.
Wow. Mm-hmm. By a woman who was in love with you?
Yep.
Yep. And you said no.
No, I said like,
because you're working now.
Well, I actually asked her, I was like, how much would it take for me to be a house husband? She's like, I like me making, you know, middle 6 figures. I was like, I'm in. Let's go. Where do we sign up?
Yeah, he would be a great house husband.
Yeah.
I think Muggs would be a great house husband.
I think so too.
I really do. So so you think what's leading to this is
women's financial freedom.
And maybe men, maybe toxic masculinity also.
Right. It's it's subsiding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Subsiding.
It's subsiding.
Yeah.
And men needing to like dominate in like a relationship in order to prove their worth. I think it's subsiding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what is your take on these relationships?
My take on these relationships is when I looked into the research of like house husbands relationships or romantic long term relationships where women are solo income earner, they tend to be really happy except for when they're not. And when they're not is usually when the man starts to feel emasculated.
Okay.
But you see how like that's such a small, when do you feel emasculated? I guess that is a challenge that if you want to be in this relationship, you have to have a conversation about. For example, like, hey, like if we are ever in a fight, like don't mention like, well, but you don't do anything. Right, because then the man will immediately feel emasculated because, you know, just because you're at home doesn't mean you don't do anything. A lot of people will attest to this. Like when you're a house husband or a housewife, there's a lot that you have to do.
Well, I would argue that a man who is open to or maintains a house husband relationship is actually more manly than any other than like a traditional man, because it takes a tremendous amount of self-security and self-confidence to not have to rely on and lean on these traditional tropes and sort of pillars of masculinity that you're taught from your father and from society, that you are such an individual and you have such a strong sense of self, furthermore, that you can find your strength and identity of masculinity in caring for the kids and in upholding the household, which is probably a lot of work if you have enough kids.
Yeah, yeah. I love that whole thing makes it sound like they're like heroes of the world. They're like super.
There is something heroic though about a
to
guy
go against the grains. Yeah,
who can do that? You know, because let's say you have a very successful wife. We've talked on previous Love Lines, I believe last episode, Dr. Tara, about these. There's a scale of sort of masculine and feminine traits and how it's not a sexual orientation thing. It's kind of just how you're made up. And some heterosexual men can have very feminine traits and heterosexual women can have very masculine traits, et cetera, et cetera. And I just think that's really, I think that's impressive. Yeah. I think as I get older too, I notice this more. I like guys that don't have to posture. Like if I'm just kind of hanging out with dudes, it's just kind of nice to be with a guy that doesn't have to.
Like stop trying so hard. Like stop trying to impress me. Like we're friends. You know, we're trying to just hang out.
Just
like,
hang out. Just you don't tell jokes all the time. You don't have to like tell stories that are made up.
Yeah.
You know, like guys do that.
Yeah. I bet house husbands don't.
House husbands? No, dude. I would love to chill with a house husband.
Right?
Yeah.
Me too. I actually, I don't know anyone in person. Do you?
In real life?
Yeah.
My uncle was kind of a house husband. I mean, he did not work, but like his wife was gone all day. I don't want to like give out too much personal information, but his wife was like, no, his wife had a very, very good job that required like a degree and was like, it's a very good job. And so she had to be gone all day. And then he had things he did for income that were like, I guess, like non-traditional.
Right.
That makes it sound like he had an OnlyFans. No, he was like, he was in like the, I guess you'd say he was in like the
like yard work.
No, nothing like that. He was actually very well respected in the like the wine world.
Oh, okay.
And so, but that would, I say non-traditional in the sense of like, he didn't have to go anywhere to contribute. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't a 9-to-5 thing, you know? And so, so he would, but furthermore, I think of that as a house husband because he would be the person to probably drive the child to school and
take care
him up
of the kids
like
most of the time.
Yeah, and that was an amazing family. I mean, that was an amazing
household.
Are
they still together?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 30, that's this statistic right here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But that is also, that uncle is one of the best people. I mean, removing myself emotionally from being related to this person and, you know, obviously having that that family connection. I just think that that guy is a very confident guy. He's a loving guy. He's a great friend to his friends. He's obviously a great father, great husband. And he's just like, he seems like a very secure person.
Yeah.
You know, that can do that.
I think all in all, like, it takes a very secure man to be in this type of relationship because you don't need the, like, external validation of your career success.
And I just want to be clear, because now I'm thinking about this. A house husband. So let's say that you're a day trader on the stock market. So you get to be home all day, right? Or maybe you're, like, a crypto person, right? Or you do something, maybe you're a sports bettor. Maybe you do something where you don't have to be somewhere from 9 to 5 every day. So you do drive the kid to school. You pick the kid up. You take him to practice. You pick him up from practice. Maybe you make dinner, right? Mm-hmm. Because your wife has a traditional job. Are you a house husband?
No, no.
Oh!
Because that's dual income.
So wait, a house husband has no income?
A house husband is like a housewife. Like most people that say like they're housewives.
Okay, then that's not, excuse me. I take back what I was saying. My uncle absolutely had an income.
Oh,
he was just like home more than the wife was home.
He took on more like household responsibilities, but it's still a dual income household, right?
Yeah, so this
which
is a single.
Which is like very, very popular in our modern culture because of how expensive everything is you need dual income. However, there's all these, you know, 18 million people in the U.S. that don't have dual income. The woman is the sole provider.
I would love to know geographical breakdown of this because
Me too.
I can't really fathom how many Americans in this day and age can be single income and live comfortably.
Right? I know.
At least in like the coastal cities. I mean, that would just be, you'd have to be making like a real ton of dough.
If you're watching and listening and you're a house husband, please reach out to us. We want to talk to you.
Yes, yes. And also loan us some money, it sounds like. Now, speaking of like house husbands and just like dual income or maybe low income households, this was an incredible story. Now, Muggs, this is a story that you sent me. And what do we have here, this clip, before I play it here, Muggs?
We have a woman who was a police officer. I believe it was in Colorado.
Now, stop right there. This was a police officer in Colorado that Muggs saw and recognized.
In person?
No, he saw this police officer being talked about. Yeah, being talked about on the internet. And he recognized this police officer.
Oh.
Now, how could that be possible, Dr. Tara? How do you think that Muggs, who lives in Southern California, could possibly recognize a Denver cop?
Maybe when you were there, you got arrested by her?
Did you ever get arrested?
Never been to Colorado.
He's never been to Colorado.
Maybe you were on a dating app and she was on it too?
No.
He didn't like apps, remember? Yeah, he told us last episode. He did apps once and he didn't like it.
Yep.
So how on earth could he recognize a police officer in another state just by her face alone?
Tara, you want to take a guess?
You had a guesses? Should I play the clip, Muggs?
Yeah, play the clip.
Okay, we'll play the clip.
You decided to do porn.
I decided to do mainstream videos, yes. My name is Shannon Laughlin. I was a deputy with Arapahoe County for 21 years.
The 44-year-old Laughlin ran her department's driving academy. But even with a steady paycheck, she ran into financial ruin. And this wife and mother felt she had no place to turn.
I was desperate. I was drowning. I found a very legal, lucrative means for providing that support for my family that I needed at that time to save my home for them.
It was quick cash and enough to catch up on her mortgage and hold off the bill collectors. Her family home was ruined by a storm last year, she says. Nearly $500,000 in damage that insurance would not cover.
But in recent weeks, someone tipped off the sheriff's office to what Laughlin was doing. An internal affairs investigation was started. She was suspended. But in the early stages of the investigation, this week, she resigned.
She says she knew she broke department rules by not asking permission to work a second job.
The mainstream in the adult industry is not something that the sheriff's office would approve of, and I understand that. I'm not going to waste the resources of the sheriff's office to do an investigation for something that, yes, I participated in that, and yes, I did that. I'm here to simply put the reasons out there on why I made the choices that I made and took the actions that I did.
There it is.
So he recognized her
from
porn. Now, I cannot tell you how much of an effect this story has had on me in a couple different ways.
Wow.
It has ruined pornography for me. Did you hear that woman's voice? It's kind of it's a little shy.
Yeah.
I would say, with all due respect, it's not incredibly sexy. And then in my due diligence, when I was, you know, because obviously I'm a professional, I had to do my research. We're going to talk about this on my radio show. I had to watch some of the material. She didn't sound anything like that.
Wow.
And so then my brain started to unravel and I started to think, is porn not real?
It's not.
Is that not how she really feels? Is she lying to me in these pornos? And it really, really broke my heart a little bit. Did it break your heart a little bit, Muggs, when you saw that clip?
Oh, no. It's nothing new. You know, it's so funny because I grew up in the porn capital of the world, also known as the San Fernando Valley, right by Chatsworth. And I actually knew a lot of girls out of my high school that went into porn. So, like, I've been kind of, like, exposed to the behind the scenes and in front of the camera.
All have you ever, and I'm not going to make you name names, obviously, out of respect for people's privacy. Did you ever see a girl you went to high school with? It didn't have to be your grade, but a girl from your area. Did you ever see her in a porno?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
And would those be like big produced pieces, or would they be like the casting videos?
They didn't have a storyline. It'd be like a casting video or
that
whatever.
Kind of thing. Because yeah. I always wondered if those were real. Because I think one of them, there was a big lawsuit against one of those because of like a false pretense or something like that, where the girls didn't realize that this was going to be publicly posted. I forget what that's called, but it was a big story in the past 10 years. But so it kind of ruined. Like, Santa Claus is no longer real to me, to use an analogy, after hearing that woman talk and seeing these. But here's the other thing that really, really shocked me. I assumed the way they talked about that, and that was CBS News, I believe, in Colorado. The way they talked about that, it sounded like she was hard up for cash, mm-hmm. and she took some, like, nude photos, right? This woman is a bona fide porn star. I mean, I don't know if Muggs has any further context to that. What I looked up, I mean, this woman was doing like, she has an active OnlyFans.
Yeah.
Active OnlyFans. She has a Twitter. Should we give out the woman's name?
I don't think so.
What? No? Wouldn't that be helping her in a way? I don't know. I thought that would be helping
her. Yeah.
But no, but
it's in the news.
wait, what's her
the acting name is Lady Lorraine, but she spells Lorraine a little funny. But if you type in like Lady Lorraine,
previous cop becomes porn star, then it will come up.
But no. So I thought she sounded so sad in that video,
right.
And I was like, this is terrible. Like, you know,
well,
I was just
had to sound sad. Well, like she had to sound sad just for people.
But here's the thing: you go to her Twitter. She's like fully embracing it now.
Yeah.
She's going to trade shows.
Good for her.
She's going to conventions. She's doing photo shoots. Like, she's totally taking on.
Yeah, and making way more than being a cop.
I can't even imagine. A friend of mine recently was telling me a friend of his makes like $50,000 a month on OnlyFans.
Yeah.
That is just. So, do you think that's a problem in society? Because a traditionalist would say it's a problem that women are going to choose that over. Especially with, like, I mean, think about this, right? I don't mean to be like the bleak guy, but AI is exploding right now. I mean, in the way that the internet did in the 1990s, AI is transforming right now. Eventually, those are going to take a lot of jobs away, and we're going to have this new world. We don't know what it's going to look for. But women will always probably have that in their possession in terms of, options, right, for employment. Is there any problem with that? That potentially women might not want to go to college, they'll just go and they'll start an OnlyFans.
I don't see any problems with that long term because of how women humans, men too, like just humans in general, we're all so different. And we have different aspirations, different desires in life, different expectations of like what we want to become. So there will always be a small group of people that want to perform and want to become an erotic performer. But then there will always be other groups of people that want to be something else.
Well, you know,
so
what's
I
funny?
Don't think it's a problem.
I think a lot of the critiques that I've heard are just sort of like veiled misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
Like personally, I wouldn't want to date somebody like that. But that's just me. I mean, to me, I'm like, there's so many
but
people to date.
But is that from your, quiet misogyny,
No, that's just like, I'm just not interested. I think it's just like, it's a complicated
Why?
Relationship. Because it's a complicated relationship.
How?
It's just a very complicated relationship. It's just what I like. I like kind of like privacy. And I like, I wouldn't want that many people. There's so many people I could date. I just wouldn't want to date that person personally. But it's also like, I don't think that person should be doing that. It's a very personal decision on me.
Right.
What I'm saying is like, men will go, well, what do they do when they get old? You know? Well, listen to this, idiot. If that's what you say, they could probably make so much money from 18 to 30, right? And beyond. But I'm just saying, 18 to 30, okay? They probably never have to work again if they invest that money well.
Period. Yeah.
So all those idiots, right, that are like angry at women for being liberated. And go, oh, you know what she's going to do when she's 40?
Yeah.
She doesn't have to do anything, moron. You're going to be working. She doesn't have to do anything. She'll be on a beach somewhere.
Exactly.
And the other, I think, veiled misogynist response to that stuff is when guys will say, who's going to want you, right? Well, there's somebody for everybody in this world. I really
100%
for every guy that wouldn't do it. Like, I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it. Right? I'm like, go off, girlfriend. It's just not for me. Right? Mm-hmm. Who knows why that is? There's two guys that'll do it. For every one guy I meet, there's probably four guys that'll date that woman.
Yeah, because usually they are very physically attractive and they're independent because obviously they're entrepreneurs. They have their own business. They make good money. Like, why not, right?
Totally.
Minus, like, the actual occupation. Like, they have all the qualities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the house husband that would be the most fun. Is just being sort of like the stunt penis. If you had an only, wouldn't that be great, Muggs?
Yeah.
You could be the stunt penis for your wife's OnlyFans. You could do whatever you want, and then you're kind of entitled to a little bit of a cut. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but she's the breadwinner.
Where do I sign up?
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. That's a good, you know what? Somebody told me one time recently, a good friend of mine that very well connected in LA in terms of like artists and whatnot. And they said a lot of struggling artists will be stunt penises in OnlyFans girls' videos.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't have OnlyFans or watch anything on OnlyFans, but I know many people that are successful OnlyFans creators. Like, one of them is Kazumi, my friend, and she has been killing it on OnlyFans. Like, she makes a lot of money.
I can't imagine how well Kazumi's doing, and the reason why is I remember being at Coachella for K-Rock last year, the radio station we're on, if you're listening to the podcast. No, seriously. I looked up, and there was one of those planes that flies, you know.
The blimp?
It wasn't a blimp. It was like, it's the type of plane. Muggs, what do you call this? It was a plane that flies a message.
It's like it's like a little Cessna. It's like a tiny plane that drags whatever message you
want.
Will
you marry me?
Like, so, or promoting something or whatever.
Yeah, but it's not like, it doesn't write anything. It has a physical message on the back.
Yeah, it's like a long banner that's flying behind it.
Kazumi had one of those at Coachella last year. So I was like, I looked at that, I remember going, and I'm not that familiar. I mean, you talk about Kazumi a lot, and I see clips on podcasts and stuff, of course. But I saw that and go, if her marketing budget is that,
oh yeah,
she's doing quite well for herself. But of course, it's like a lot of guys would be intimidated by that. Mm-hmm. I think guys are very intimidated by sexually liberated women. Mm-hmm. You know,
oh yeah,
I think so. But also, to play devil's advocate on the other side, there are a lot of women that are using sex as sort of a coping mechanism.
Yeah,
that are then in a way, there's a veil to themselves because that's veiled coping that they're saying is liberation.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and like women like using sex as like a control and gatekeeping mechanism in a relationship.
Right.
You know, there's this like withdraw ability where they can just withdraw anytime and make their partner like beg and wait and right, because ultimately like you're the gatekeeper of your body. Yeah.
Totally.
So there's a lot of people that actually like use that for like manipulation and control within a relationship as well, right?
I bet men do that with money.
Yeah. Right? Oh yeah, especially back in the days when women couldn't work and couldn't get a divorce. Like, people always say, you know, oh, all these kids, like millennials and, you know, all these kids who get in a divorce left and right. Back in my days, no one got a divorce. I'm like, well, yeah, because she couldn't.
Crazy. Oh, yeah. She didn't go to college.
Yeah.
Now, in closing here, before we get a break, this police officer turned porn star. The one thing I was disappointed about was that there's no incorporation of her being a police officer in the porno. Didn't you think that was weird, Mugs? She's got to start doing that, right?
Like, I think she will.
You got to write in a part for in some sort of a porn that she's a
cop.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
I want to see that. But you don't see anything problematic. This woman's just earning a ton of money, and if it works for her, it works for her.
Totally.
Right. Okay, very cool. More Loveline coming up next.
Loveline will be right back.
Loveline on K-Rock.
No one else can find the trouble so quickly or repair it so economically.
Loveline's coming right back. Hang on.
KROQ.
Back to Loveline with Kevin Kenny and Dr. Tara. Call or text 833-LOVE-191.
You ready to get kinky? K-Rock.
Well, Tara?
Yes?
She asked you a question. Are you ready to get kinky?
Oh, yeah.
Mugs are already kinky.
My nipples are hard.
There. Thank you for sharing. It is Kevin Kenny, Dr. Tara, producer Mugs, and it is Loveline, episode 7. If you're listening on K-Rock, what up? If you're listening on the podcast, thank you very much. Hey, leave a rating, by the way, on the podcast. How do people do that? I saw like 11 people have done it already, which is that's a big deal for us.
Yes, that's nice. Yeah, click on the dot, dot, dot of the show, and then there is a little thing that says rate. Just click rate, and then you can do a 5-star.
Nice. Please do that. Now, we talked earlier in the show, if you're listening on K-Rock, of course you know this if you're listening to the podcast, about a police officer turned porn star that we've affectionately named Porn Cop. And we should really, I'm being serious, we should have Porn Cop on the show.
Yeah.
Because I know you were like, oh, don't say her name. But no. I think she probably, that's her new career.
She wants to promote it.
And I think Porn Cop, we got to get Porn Cop on the line. Anyways.
Porn Cop. We're going to. Bum, 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 bum was the jingle I would have had.
Okay. If he had known. We talked about Porn Cop, right? We also talked about toxic relationships earlier. Mm-hmm. I mean, Matt Barnes, a former NBA player, a popular podcaster. I think he has a podcast. I see him all the time on my feed. His fiance is accusing him of cheating on her 8 times alone in January. There's been restraining orders in that relationship, allegedly. Or do you have to say allegedly? There's been a restraining orders in that relationship in the past, and we talked about toxic relationships, and then we talked about police officers, and now we're going to combine the two, and we're going to talk about O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson. Are you familiar with Orenthal James Simpson, Dr. Tara?
Yeah. Isn't it like, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit?
Perfect. Well said.
Right. Yeah. And that also goes for partners, right?
Yes.
Ladies! Now, you grew up in Thailand. What did you know about, when's the first time you ever heard about O.J. Simpson?
When I came here.
When you came here?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that come up?
Because people were, I think they were talking about, sports people that became kind of bad people.
Okay. Kind of bad people? Is that how we became bad people?
Yeah. Yes.
I feel like that is one of the worst people probably that ever lived.
Yes.
It's kind of interesting to talk about O.J. Simpson on this episode. If you've been listening on the podcast or if you're just listening on K-Rock, please check out the full podcast episode because you won't know what the hell we're talking about. We were talking about people in bad relationships and how important it is to catch them early because you don't understand the depths to which they can, because if you watch Forensic Files, if you watch Unsolved Mysteries, everyone starts the same. Oh, I could never imagine there were no warning signs, right? That's what they always say, right? We've talked about confirmation biases on the show today. You never see it, and don't put yourself above a tragedy. I don't know. No, I mean it. I mean it. I'm not making a joke. Do not put yourself above a tragedy, because it could happen to anybody, and I just think that it's really important to hit that point when talking about O.J. Simpson, when talking about some of these toxic relationships, because you just don't know. I mean, you talked about a woman named Becky who wound up, I think, killing her partner.
Yeah, I think I got to look this up now.
Okay. Well, you look that up. O.J. Simpson has a new Netflix documentary, and I was shocked to hear this because there are so many documentaries on this case. There have been so many specials on this case. There are so many books on this case. I couldn't imagine that there was anything else to talk about when it came to O.J. Simpson and the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and Roger Goldman. But
Ron.
Excuse me. Beg my pardon, Ron Goldman. Muggs, you are like O.J. Simpson savant, and you are really into this docuseries.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like you said, there's been so many released, whether it be like short ones on cable television or whatever streaming service you have. And just when you think like they're not going to have like a different angle to present what happened in 94 and 95 and like the rest of that whole saga, boom, they come out with another one on Netflix, and it's American Manhunt O.J. Simpson. And it is stuff that I already knew, but they really like just get more detailed with it. And it really kind of like, I mean, they have all the original people that they interviewed, and I guess it was ESPN had made a 30 for 30 called June 17th, 94. And then they had another one, I forgot the name. It's escaping me. Anyway, they were both really good. And then Netflix has this one, and you just like see all the people they had interviewed older now, and really like, I don't know how they got them to like get more detailed, but that's what they did. It's really good.
Well, what is different about it other than that the people are older? Like, what did you learn about the case that's new?
For instance, they interviewed the guy. He was a skycap. Are you familiar with this? What a skycap is?
It's no
people at an airport that check your bags when you arrive to the curb.
Okay.
He had seen OJ when he arrived to the airport the night of the murders when he's going to Chicago. He had seen OJ walk up to a trash can and dump
He had his Louis Vuitton bag with him, a very nice, expensive designer bag. And then he had what the guy described as a black canvas bag, like a really cheap gym bag. Mm. And he walked right up. He got right out of the limo. None of the sky caps could touch that black canvas bag. They could touch everything else. But he had that draped around his body, like with a tight grip, said, no, don't grab that. And then that sky cap had seen OJ walk over to the trash can at LAX and like open up the bag and quickly grab stuff out of the bag and hold it low and like you're throwing, like you're discarding stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I had no idea about that. Also, they interviewed which by the way, they tell you that guy's testimony, they never used in court. They never interviewed that guy. They never did anything. And a lot of the stuff done by the LAPD, the detectives at the time was like, it was, an S show, as they describe it. Like, they just did
Why didn't they do it? Why didn't they include that piece of evidence?
Well, like, it's tough because you got to consider
like
the
corrupt cops.
No, well, no. I mean, that's a totally. You can debate the corruption of the LAPD at that point in time for weeks, if not months. Clearly for 30 years, you can debate that. You don't always want to. It's not always so straightforward in the court of law, right? Because you have to verify the integrity of the person. Mm. And then you also have to sort of think ahead and play chess and go, how could they attack this person? Is this verifiable? Another witness that was not called to the stand in the criminal trial was a woman who had an eyewitness account of OJ. I believe, Muggs, tell me if, and please, Muggs, on your computer, check this out.
Yeah.
I believe it was San Vicente, the road in Los Angeles. She had an eyewitness account of O.J. Simpson in a white Bronco at the time, immediately following the time of the murders on Bundy, which is intersects with San Vicente, I believe, Muggs, crossing and running a red light. And she was not called to take the stand because she had sold that story to, I believe, Inside Edition, a TV program that it might be still on, for like $5,000. So that compromised her. So that's the unfortunate thing sometimes about court is you go, well, this poor woman just wanted some money, and she's just thinking, all I got to do is just say what I saw that night for $5,000. Mm-hmm. Good, honest woman, right, to our estimate.
Oh, and now you can't use it in court.
And now you can't use it.
Jill Shively was her name.
Jill Shively. Yeah. And you were saying she's in the documentary, Muggs?
Yeah, she's in the documentary, and then they say, like, she has her soundbite. They're interviewing her. And it's kind of cool how they set it up. Everybody that they interview are like in some sort of an empty residence. It's like they're in a living room, but there's no furniture in the living room. The detective on the case is in like a old like police building, and there's no furniture in the police building. It's cool how they shot it. But Jill Shively, they interview her, and after her soundbite, they just do like a freeze frame, and it says, this evidence was never used in court. They don't say why, but they tell you it was never used.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just an incredible trial, obviously. It was called the trial of the century at the time, and it certainly lived up to that and probably exceeded that in terms of the attention. I mean, they had it on the Jumbotron in Times Square in New York and probably around the world as well.
95 million viewers.
Yeah, I mean, that's just unthinkable.
Well, it involved like everything that people are obsessed about, right? Like fame, money, celebrities, crime of passion, potential infidelity, potential violence, domestic violence, and race.
Yeah. By the way, this probably, you know, I was remarking if we really needed another documentary, another piece of content on television. That's definitely what they say in every pitch meeting, Muggs, to get these things greenlit.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Exactly what Tara said.
These bullet points.
Yeah, of course. And then they go, this will reach everybody. Everybody will watch this. And when we do. But it's really a lesson in terms of the scope of Loveline as just a very incredibly toxic relationship. I mean, and these are things, if you're interested in the case, you can read. Is it Faye Resnick, I believe her name is? She's one of Nicole Brown Simpson's good friends. She wrote a book that, I think in the midst of the trial, that talks about sort of Nicole's side of things. I think Nicole's diary got published. I'm pretty sure if you want to look that up, Muggs, so you can read that. OJ wrote a book called If I Did It, which is, I think everybody should read that book. That book is fascinating because,
it outline?
What happened if he did it? And there's a whole chapter on if he did it. This is what could have happened.
Wow.
And he said that he did that because he was trying to get out of debt and things like that, I believe. He was having financial issues. And so somebody in 2006, they finally put out this book. And he outlines how a guy, again, for legal purposes, it is very clear that this was, in OJ's words, like this was, if he did it, it was a hypothetical.
Creative ideas.
Hypothetical, yeah, I think is the word. A hypothetical. And so he outlines how a guy named Charlie came to his house that night, told him about what Nicole was doing sexually, and Nicole was being promiscuous or something to that effect. And then OJ said he and Charlie went over there to scare her, and in the midst of trying to scare her, they ran into Ron Goldman, and then you know, one thing led to another. What's interesting is that there is a serial killer. Can you look this up, Muggs? Get some confirmation on this. There is a serial killer, I believe. He might be deceased now, but he was free at the time, and I think he claimed to have been either supplying Nicole with drugs or doing work on Nicole's house, and he claims to have done this with OJ.
Glenn Edward Rogers.
So is there a blurb you could read for the listener, Muggs, about Glenn?
It says, yeah, hold on one second.
Because this is interesting. This theory is like, you know, and again, this could be totally like BS, but It is a compelling theory.
Hold on.
Because that night, as you looked that up, Muggs.
Yeah. Okay, so a 2012 documentary entitled My Brother, the Serial Killer, examined Rogers' crimes and included claims that Rogers had killed Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman in California in 94. According to Rogers' brother, Clay, Rogers claimed that before the murders, he had met Brown and was going to take her down. During a lengthy correspondence that began in 2009 between Rogers and criminal profiler Anthony Mioli, Rogers wrote and created paintings about his involvement with the murders. During a prison meeting between the two, Rogers claimed O.J. Simpson hired him to break into Nicole Brown Simpson's house to steal some expensive jewelry. He said that Simpson had told him, "You may have to kill the bitch." In a filmed interview, Glenn's brother Clay asserts that his brother confessed his involvement.
Now, could that be true? Of course. Could that also be a crazy person who wants to be a part of a famous thing? Of course, too. I mean, this town is like full of people, Tara, that are like in a room one time with a famous person, and then they'll tell stories how they hung out or partied with that person. So, you know, there's a little bit of that at play, too.
Yeah.
But I what I did want to say before we move on to questions on Loveline and keep us good with the time there, Muggs, is if you read these books, and I was so into this case last year, I just got really into it. I read all these books. I read OJ's book. I read the I read the lawyer's books. I read.
Now, what got you into it? Like, why are you so into it?
Well, it was just fascinating to me, and I think people's ability to lie is fascinating, right?
Yeah.
It's like, wow, I can't lie like that.
And
I think you're saying
like his ability to lie.
Yeah. Because I mean, it's unbelievable the evidence against this guy.
Yeah. We got to give Tara like an example of like how he lied. And it's so clear cut. If you're a person to this day in 2025 that still thinks that O.J. Simpson was set up or wasn't how some involved or directly, you could be sold the biggest bill of goods. There was a deposition that he did. So after the criminal trial, which he was acquitted, he was sued in civil court by the families of the victims. And they were interviewing him about the shoes the imprint of the shoes that was found at the crime scene at Rockingham and Nicole Brown Simpson's condo. And they were literally on camera. Well, here, let me play the audio. You can listen to the whole thing.
And just for context and just to set the table here, if you're unfamiliar with the case, these are Bruno Mali shoes, which is an Italian shoe, incredibly rare, even more rare in the size that were found at the crime scene, which would have fit a professional athlete's larger foot like O.J. Simpson. So, I mean, it's a rare brand. It's a rare shoe. It's an expensive shoe. It's a specific shoe and even made more specific by the size of that shoe.
And to set it up, finally, they were holding up a picture of OJ when he used to do sideline reporting for NBC Sports.
Yeah.
And he's wearing the same exact shoe and he's wearing the same exact gloves that were found at the crime scene. Here we go.
Did you ever buy shoes that you knew were Bruno Mali's shoes?
No. Because I know if Bruno Magli makes shoes that look like the shoes they had in court that's involved in this case, I would have never worn those ugly-ass shoes.
You thought those were ugly-ass shoes?
Yes.
Why were they ugly-ass shoes?
Because in my mind, they were.
What about them was ugly, Mr. Simpson?
The look of them, the style of them.
What about the style?
I don't know. They were ugly to me. Aesthetically, I felt that they were ugly, and I guess beauty is an eye of the beholder, and to me, they were ugly shoes.
What this also highlights to me is just people's sort of brazenness with the truth before sort of like the surveillance state we live in now, right? Mm-hmm. Where sort of like I grew up with the iPhone. You grew up with the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Like, you know there's like I wouldn't lie about anything because there's a text thread. There's location stamps of me everywhere that you can just probably, you know, send to Apple and get that from Apple in the court of law. And so, but back then you could just make stuff up. And if nobody's, like, there weren't any cameras on traffic lights on San Vicente that night. Imagine if there were, you couldn't do this. By the way, I've done that drive. I mean, some people do that, and I don't know if it's crass to do, but I was just curious. And I did the drive from Bundy to Rockingham, which is where OJ lived, and that house is gone. I mean, the house can look, you can still tell it's the corner, but the house looks completely different. And I'm not trying to encourage you to do that. Let those people live in peace, they live over there now. But I did it one time. It is, I mean, you know when you say something's 2 minutes away? I don't know if it's 2 minutes. It might be 5 minutes away. It's like it feels like a 2 minute drive.
Right.
You know what I mean? Especially if you don't hit a light. And like that eyewitness said, she saw him go through that light that night. It's even made it even easier. And it's a crazy story. But what I wanted to, in terms of a value to get out of that, while having a doctor here of sexual health, if you read about this case, there's so many warning signs. It starts with a big age gap. Where he's old, he's in his 30s, I believe, and she's 18 years old. And she's a waitress, and they meet in Los Angeles. Nicole's 18, and she has like no experience in life. No, so he's shaping this woman. Maybe you'd say in modern terms, grooming, right? And then first, it's control. He wants to control how she looks, what she does, how she dresses, right? And then it just starts to get bastardized. And then when she starts acting out of line, he gets violent. Long history of domestic violence. So. Can you share anything if somebody is in a relationship and maybe they're normalizing the abuse?
Mm-hmm.
What are things to look for that are like, you know, there are things you can look for and if you're taking medication, it says if this happens, go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
What are the equivalent of that in an abusive relationship?
Outbursts.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be a really easy telltale sign because people will say like, you know, if they seem distant at times and affectionate at times, but I think that isn't like as clear as like if they have an outburst, and it doesn't even have to be physical violence outburst. It can just be an emotional outburst, or it can even be manipulation or gaslighting. Then I think if that is happening in your relationship or, you know, your siblings or your friends and you're observing it, it is good to start talking to someone and start documenting things happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like, let's say your boyfriend, I'm just thinking of traditional examples. Of course, women can assault men too.
Right.
And whoever you date. But let's say if your male partner yells at you, let's say blows up at you, screams at you. Is that, like, should you break up with him?
How many times? Like, you know, the first time you need to really kind of sit them down afterwards and, like, talk about boundaries. Like, this can never happen
again.
Yeah,
but you know a lot of women can't do that.
Right, but they
so what do you do if you can't do that? What if you can't even fathom talking to this guy about this issue?
By yourself?
Yeah.
Oh, then couples counseling. You have to go to couples counseling if you want to be with the person.
But I'm thinking about more realistically. I know, by the way, everything you're saying is 110%.
I think what you're saying is if they're not super in love with each other, then yeah, break up with them.
Well, no. I'm saying, like, let's say you're dating a guy that for some reason, as problematic as it might be, if you suggest couples counseling, he's going to flip out. If you try to tell him what's up, he's going to flip out. And maybe you're not a lot of women... Not a lot of women, but some women that are prone, I think, to abuse, they might not be the best communicators, right? Like, what does that person do? Like, what's the easiest and safest way to get out of an abusive relationship is maybe my question.
To leave and go stay at your friends or your parents.
Okay.
Like, be around the people that you love and trust. Yeah,
okay.
Because you don't want to leave and go be by yourself.
Well, but let's say you think this guy's just gonna like how do you cut it off with the guy?
You leave. You can leave a note. You can like write a letter for them before you leave. But
okay.
You have to if physical danger is involved,
right.
Like potential,
right?
Then you don't want to give them any heads up,
right?
Right. Like then.
Right.
But if you want to leave a message, I would like write a letter, or leave first and then you can leave a text message later. But it is not necessary for you to like confront them face to face if you feel like you're in danger. Not at all. You should leave first and make sure that you're with someone that can be there for you, be an like eyewitness like that can take care of you, because ultimately you don't want them to come back, because usually, you know, losing control like this, like a woman leaving you, like the man probably gets really upset if they already have that kind of problem. Then they're probably trying to come find them.
Mm.
So it's really important to like be with other people and also to document everything that's happening, because the cops can't like... They're not going to investigate, especially if it's like emotional abuse and it's not physical abuse. Like they only investigate physical abuse. And even if that, I don't think it's that thorough, right? Because they have like so many things in their hands. So just make sure that you document everything.
So what is the best advice we can offer somebody when that problematic partner comes back? When the abusive partner comes back and they say, I'm different now, I've changed. What's the advice?
It is possible that they are different and they have changed.
But how, like, is there a time? Is there an amount of time? Because what I'm getting
there
at is
isn't.
Like, but the age old story though, Tara, is I'm saying like, you know, you have the abusive, and I hate to be cliche here, the abusive boyfriend. And the abusive boyfriend will come to their senses, or they'll come down, or they'll need that dopamine hit they got from the partner that they're abusive with. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, I'm different now. I've changed.
Oh yeah, no, like no one changes like that.
So, but what's like a good amount of time?
I would say 5 years.
5 years?
Yeah, don't you think?
If somebody came
for
back,
people
I don't
to
care fundamentally
change who they are.
I agree with you there.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if I heard from anyone from 5 years ago, I would say, hey, are you okay?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing hitting me up? Like, this is old news.
Well, it depends on how in love you were with that person. Maybe it was your like first and only love. And ever since then, you've never been in love again.
Would you be willing to say odds on... You just should never get back with an abusive person.
Usually, yeah.
Usually. Exactly. I mean, I think that, and not to put, I don't want to put a doctor on the spot like this, but I mean, would you be open to a layman like me saying over 95% of the time you should not, that's me saying it, not the doctor, take back anyone who was ever abusive to you?
Right.
I think so, right?
I would say that, yeah. Like that would be the advice I give to my little sister if she was ever in that position.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think also for guys listening, because I can think back to really toxic relationships that I played a big part in, vice versa. There are certain people, if you're a guy and your girlfriend gets you, or wife or whatever, or even if you're dating a guy, if you're gay, if your partner gets you really, really angry, like, and you're not an angry person, but they just know how to get you really angry, I think you should preemptively... I don't think you should be dating someone that gets you that angry.
Mm-mm.
I know that sounds so obvious, mm-hmm. but again, we've talked about movies and their influence mm-hmm. and stuff on the show today. And it's just like, oh no, it's this complicated, oh, that's toxic love. You know, mm-hmm. dude.
No.
If she gets you that angry, if he gets you that angry, dude, and you don't recognize yourself, mm-hmm. back away. It's a bad mix. And there's always more fish in the sea.
The only way relationships should go is when it's peaceful.
Yes.
Yeah. It should be peaceful.
Stop trying to fix people.
Right.
Stop trying to change people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think most people even want to change.
Unfortunately.
They don't, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Muggs, any thoughts on that?
To Tara's point earlier, whoever is being abused in a relationship, they're supposed to take note. I think like... One of the things that stands out in all these OJ documentaries is that she reported it. She took diaries, wrote everything that happened in those diaries. And I think OJ was just such a massive figure that he just got preferential treatment, you know?
I mean, that's the halo effect, right? Have you guys heard of halo effect?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, obviously, like a celebrity who a lot of people look up to, who a lot of people love and feel like they support them, they get away with a lot of things.
Yeah.
Because of the halo effect.
And then imagine that halo effect is also your first love. Because
right.
he met you when you were 18 years old.
Right.
So again, that is an OJ doc that is out right now on Netflix if you want to check it out. And again, all those books are really fascinating if you have that interest in true crime in that case. And especially if you're listening to Loveline in Los Angeles and you have a connection to it. It's like, it is in LA. It's a very uniquely LA story, from the geography of it to the history of it. And especially OJ's long history here dating back to USC. It's very fascinating. Dr. Tara, Where can people that listen to Loveline find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram and TikTok at lovebites.co. That's LUVBITES.CO.
Amazing. And you can find this show, Loveline, at Loveline on Instagram and also on TikTok there. Muggs, thanks for all your hard work behind the scenes. We will talk to you next time.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on Loveline are not necessarily those of staff, management, sponsors, or the station.
Loveline is produced and engineered by Jonathan Beermug Cantrell. Loveline is a presentation of the world-famous K-Rock.
You hang up first.
No, you hang up first.
I'm not hanging up till you hang up, so hang up.
Well, I'm not hanging up till you hang up, so you hang up.
Okay, on the count of three, we'll both hang up. Cool?
Cool.